everyone, and welcome to that classic rock show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, the mighty 101.5 FM. I am Jim Samaria.
Greetings, Jim, and greetings, listeners. I am your co-host, Mark Plotnick. Each week, Jim and I bring you songs, insights, and interviews covering rock music and more from the 1950s through the 1980s, or wherever the music takes us.
Mark and I are authors of the book Classic Rock, Photographs from Yesterday and Today, and you could find it at Hal Vallis Records in my hometown of Oak Park. Our book features my photography of classic rock artists from 1973 to present day with words by the guy sitting right across from me, Mr. Mark Plotnick.
Yeah, and the guy to the right of me who's working the boards is the person who makes this show broadcast worthy. It's our station's executive director, Mr. Jim Eggers.
And he's such a nice guy.
And he just put thumbs up. So yeah,
and he puts out a nice spread in the morning, all the eggs and ham and all that.
Really?
Nice.
I don't get any of those.
Well, today we are very excited to have on our show a man who not only is a great musician, but is a Grammy-winning record producer, Mr. Paul Nelson. And by the way, folks, he'll be appearing with his band October 21st at Buddy Guy's Legends in Chicago. So, Paul, thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, pleasure.
Well, Paul,
speak with you guys. I'm excited about the show coming up.
Well, Paul, there's so much to talk about because your career encompasses so many areas of the music business. So let's start at the beginning. What got you interested in music and who were your early influences?
Well, we can go way, way back where I first picked up a guitar and started strumming it. And my classmates, as a birthday present, bought me a Firebird with a rosewood neck. Yeah.
For your first guitar?
What are the odds of that? Yeah. So then I'm like, well, I guess I got to keep on playing this thing. So I was listening to all, which is now classic rock, Led Zeppelin, and then blues, B.B. King, Albert King, Johnny Winter. And then I got into, California style blues, Robin Ford, Carlton, that kind of thing.
Jazzy blues,
Everything. But at the same time, I was joining all these different types of bands because I was grooming myself to be a career musician, a session guy. So there were some studios in my area that I would do guitar work for as I became better. I went to Berkeley. Studied with Steve Vai, I studied with Mike Stern, Steve Kahn, anybody I could find, and I was a big theory head. But at the same time, I got into pop and reggae and funk and blues and jazz and everything. So my, the phone was always ringing, and I wanted to keep it that way. And, you have to be in the right place all the time, and then things happen. And that's how it happened later on with Johnny and other things I did before that and now.
What was it like having Steve Vai as a teacher?
Well, the lesson cost me a carton of cigarettes.
Oh my gosh.
Per lesson.
Such a deal.
Yeah.
Wow.
Exactly. Yeah. He was off campus up in Boston near Berkeley. But, that's where I found out that he had studied with, Joe Satriani. And that's a whole nother, whole nother story. I guess they were both from Long Island or whatever, but it was a lot of ear training, a lot of chords. We were sight reading out of saxophone books, so, all kinds of stuff and scales and modes and this, just getting your ear together and your playing together. But then after that, I was always into taking private lessons. So I always sought out the best people, not in my area, but like outside the area. Because I figured if I could be 50% as good as the greatest guy in the world, that's a lot better than being 50% as good as the local hero, So I set my sights a little higher.
Yeah, the first time I ever saw Steve Vai was in the movie Crossroads, and it's like, who the heck is this guy?
Right?
Ralph Macchio.
Exactly.
With Ralph Macchio, yep. Yeah, that movie. And it's like, who is this guy? And then I started listening to him. It's like, holy cow, how come I never heard of this guy? But he's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
He's amazing.
Well, they had that stint with Zappa.
Yes.
Know, those Crush All Boxes, all those things. And he got that gig from sending transcriptions of Zappa tunes to his house. And then Zappa said, who's writing these transcriptions? And then he would send recordings of his music. And he says, well, who's playing it? Who's playing all the parts? So that's what I'm saying. Being in the right place all the time, that's how it happens. So you got to be out there. The networking is very important and touring.
Zappa has, was quite a musician in Berkeley's very prestigious college. So, well, let's jump forward in your career, yep. specifically around the year 1999. I think that's when it was. And it was by chance that you met Johnny Winter, one of your musical heroes, and one of, in my opinion, one of the greatest post-World War II practitioners of both rural and urban blues. So tell us how you guys crossed paths.
Well, as luck would have it, I was doing a session, and I was recording the music for the XFL then. And I was doing rock parts, blues parts. I was playing all the music for the player cameos, for the cheerleaders, for the Vince McMahon's background music, for all the coaches.
This was the football league you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So I'm in there, and Dick Sherman and Johnny hear me as they're waiting to get into their session, because I knew the studio owner. And they said, hey, you know, we're kind of stuck here. We need a couple songs for the upcoming album we're working on. Johnny likes the way you play. Do you have anything? So that night I got some musicians together. All his gear was there, the drums, the bass. So I found a singer that was in a Johnny Winter tribute band who sang just like Johnny, well, as close as possible. And I wrote a song called... it was I'm a Blues Man. So I played it for him, and then he liked it, and he said, you know, there's some other guitar parts in there. How'd you like to record on the album? And I was like, okay. So then it continued from there, and then it led, well, now you're on the album. How'd you like to come on tour? And we befriended each other, and there was a great music relationship there and a trust. You know, I saw that his health wasn't that good, so later on, people know I stepped in and helped out in that regard, but there's more fun stuff deeper to that if you want to get into it or the next 3 hour shows. But so that's how it started, and then it just snowballed, and then all of a sudden I'm on tour with Johnny like 4 days later, and we're in Bishopstock in England, and I'm sitting in a giant castle, and to my right is Van Morrison. And to my left is Taj Mahal, and I'm having a peanut butter sandwich, having like a whatever. And I'm like, this is actually pretty cool. Yeah. And then it led to traveling and just gigs everywhere. I mean, when you say, you know, where have you been? Have you been to France? It's like 78 times. Have you been to here, Serbia? It was just tour after tour after tour. And then he eventually graced me with the honor of becoming his producer. And the rest was musical history, as I'm sure we'll get into.
Well, you know, you did so much more than just produce and be his rhythm guitarist, and you had your leads and stuff. But you also got him healthy. How did you do that? Because I would imagine a man like Johnny was pretty set in his ways, but you did a lot. So what did you do to get him healthy?
Well, there's a movie that came out that I executive produced. It's called Johnny Winter. Down and Dirty. And it actually describes everything. It features Clive Davis, Billy Gibbons, Joe Perry, Johnny's first guitar teacher. And it's insight on the road for like 3 years, you know, and all the stuff that went on. And you can actually see Johnny get younger and healthier. And he started standing, and he, you know, his playing improved, and his started getting awards and that kind of thing. But I got him off. He had, you know, he had the demons, he had the drinking, he had the same kind of pills that Ozzy Osbourne was on. As a matter of fact, he made Ozzy Osbourne look like he had training wheels. we would laugh about that, but, or the methadone, the this and the that. I mean, you know, it was insane that the amount of stuff, it was unbelievable. He was just a shell of a person. And it was like, it was just, I saw a human being that needed help, and I just stepped in because no one else did. It was like the emperor's new clothes, you know?
Yeah.
So, and that's how a trust was established. Not a trust, but like a trust between he and I to help him out and get results. And that's how, you know, he went out on a high note, like Edgar said, his brother. And they were very appreciative for what I did for him.
Well, you know, I have to say it all worked.
He was like a father to me. Yeah.
Well, I have to say it all worked because I probably saw him a half a dozen times in the last, up until he passed away.
Yeah.
And his playing was outstanding. And of course, the band you guys put together was outstanding.
Yeah, I mean, well, I started off, it was just an honor to play with Johnny as his guitar player. You know, like I mentioned off air, you know, there were only like two other guys that had the honor of playing side by side with him. It was Rick Derringer and Floyd Radford, maybe. That's it. So this was a big thing for me as a musician. This was my idol. But then it got deeper, you know? So
well,
it was something else.
You know, as time went on, and of course with your support, which we've been talking about, Johnny was playing gigs again, recording, and back on top, if you will. In 2014, he released the album Step Back, which featured guest appearances by Eric Clapton, Joe Bonamassa, Joe Perry, and, others, and of course you. And it won a Grammy for Best Blues Album and a Blues Music Award for Best Blues Rock Album, correct?
Correct.
Yes. So how did you get these superstar artists to participate? And just tell us how the recording was accomplished. Just kind of describe it all.
It was a pain in the butt.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's too much detail.
I'll tell you about that. You said Johnny had a comeback. It's funny because Johnny said to me, he goes, Paul, I know what you're doing and what we're doing, and I know I'm having a comeback, but I never went anywhere. I go,
I'm still alive and well. That's what he's saying.
That's good point. But I cracked up. I'm like, I get it. Yeah, it's just you're more, you know, we did Letterman together. We did Kimmel together. And that was, you know, that showed he was healthy. We did those crossroads festivals. But as far as the album and getting the guests, well, when Johnny Winter knocks and the artist know that he's getting healthier, no one says no. But the availability, this one's on tour. Clap is doing this, that, and all. It's crazy. So, you know, it's scheduling. And that's what a producer, you know, people ask what a producer does. And I always feel if you have to ask what a producer does, you're not ready for one. You don't really get what they do. Everything, when you see an album released, it's the tip of the iceberg of everything that went on or had the possibility of never happening, you know? So getting each artist, when I would receive their tracks, it would be like getting a Christmas present every day, you know what? And I was playing side by side on these songs with Johnny. This was a huge, huge honor in itself. But you would get a track from Vince Gill, who I contacted either through myself or told my publicist or I had seen him on a gig. But what I told Johnny in the beginning was, look, we're going to do an album, and I want it to be all the 11 or 12 songs or whatever it was, one song from each artist that influenced you growing up in the blues. And he was like, oh, great. All I want to play is blues. He hated his rock period. He thought he sold himself short or out.
I just want to mention, he played a small club beginnings in one of the Chicago suburbs. I was at that show. And I remember he got up on stage and told the audience, I'm just going to be playing the blues today. And this was during his rock and roll more heyday. And the audience wasn't quite ready to accept it. And he got up there and he read the Riot Act to the audience and says, if it wasn't for blues, none of us would be here. So I just wanted to mention that. That's all.
Yeah. And if it wasn't for Johnny and people and him getting into the rock world and people studying his lineage, they would have never went backwards in time to find out who influenced him and found out about Muddy and Robert Johnson.
Exactly.
And all those. Is that and I mentioned that to him. I said, Johnny, you had a huge influence. And I was so weird that I had to say it to him. You know, I thought he kind of got it. But, he always complained about, you know, I was doing this and that. You know, when I joined Muddy Waters, they thought I was going to destroy him because I was too rocked out. And all I wanted him to do was go back to his roots. So for him to hand the gauntlet to me to produce him after what he did with Muddy getting 3 Grammys, I was like, okay. But I realized he had the trust in me to free him up to do what he had to do, which was play and sing when he was getting healthier. But again, with the artists and bringing them in, each one had their own little unique story. And I also, there was an album before that called Roots, And then there was an album before that called I'm a Blues Man, which was one of those songs that I said that we met. That was supposed to be a duet with B.B. King. But he was having some problems with the kids and the ex-wives and all this kind of stuff. So I had to immediately turn that song into a solo song. And then Johnny took it and said, I'm going to call the album the song you wrote, I'm a Blues Man. So there were a ton of guests on Roots. Sonny Landreth, Warren Haynes, his brother. We did Edgar was on that. Who else was on that? Jimmy Vivino. Who else was on? Vince Gill was on that, but he and I and Johnny did Maybelline together. And then Step Back was the follow-up to that. We were going to do a series of four volumes, and then it was going to be a box set. And it was all because Johnny had so many songs. He picked the songs for Roots and Step Back in like 15 minutes. I want to do Chuck Berry, Brown Eyed Handsome Man. I want to do this. I want to do this. So once he gave me the songs, and I'll tell you how I got the guests. Once he gave me the songs, then I knew the grooves. So I had us as a band and a musical director research the original versions. The second versions, you know, like Dust My Broom is not the original Dust My Broom when we hear it. There's like three decades before of versions and then the original.
Robert Johnson.
So we learned, right. So we learned every single version. So when I went back to Johnny and I said, okay, he's like, wow, you listen to the originals. That's the riff from the original. That people don't play it that way. So it made him comfortable. Then once I had those grooves, I knew the artist that I needed to turn those songs a little more contemporary and fit the artist that was going to come in, because I knew if I'm sending tracks to Billy Gibbons, this better be good, you know, and it better have like a little ZZ Top pulse to it, or the Clapton thing better be really traditional, like Bobby Blue Bland, I Don't Want No Woman, or like Ben Harper or Leslie West better be like, you know, Mountain, but still cater to the blues. So, and I didn't want it to be, and I think that's what people noticed, was I didn't want it to be a shred fest. Riff, riff, riff. These were still songs. So they had to serve as a song. So I didn't put in these long extended solos. Everybody had like 8 bars each. That's it. Then it was the singing and the fills, and I traded off fills, and I did like I edited a duet with Susan Tedeschi and that kind of thing.
Wow.
And it went over. So, that's how the artists were brought in. And then there's phone calls and publicists and record labels and the touring. But that's what delayed stuff, sort of. I was really on top of it. And then we went to Japan and we toured over there, so we had to come back. But, you know, you had Clapton on tour over here, so some of them were sending in tracks and they were recording them in Spain or wherever they were and sending them in. But a lot of them were in the studio. John Medeski, Warren Haynes, the horn, Letterman Horns, you know. He had a ton of horns on there. So that's the tip of the process. But there were a lot of funny moments, obviously, and near misses.
Well, Paul, it all worked. It all worked.
It worked.
And the Grammy worked. And the Grammy folks thought so too. So that was
right.
Quite
and
cool.
what I did was, you know, sonically, I knew that some stuff was coming from different studios and some was being done in ours. And the worst thing to do when you make an album like that is having it sound like the guy just flew in, threw a riff on there. So I contacted the engineers of each studio and I said, give me the room dimensions. Give me the equipment you're going through. Give me the amps you're using. What was the distance of the microphones? Because I recreated that in our studio to sound like they were all there, just to give it that extra organic kind of thing. And then obviously the artists that were there, it was a no-brainer. So that really helped the production value. And then I went to Sterling, you know, the top place to get it mastered for you guys on the radio to play. I'm always conscious of playing it and making it for you guys. That's the key.
Well, let's play a couple songs from the Step Back album. The first one's Killing Floor that features our guest, Paul Nelson. And then the second song is Don't Want No Woman, features some guy named Eric Clapton.
Something
like
Slowhand.
Yeah, he's pretty good. All right, spin the tunes.
I should have put you said, go to Mexico with me. I should have gone along. Well, my friend said, go to Mexico with me. I wouldn't be down here, down on the killing floor. because you're mean that I won't deny. Before I let you boss me, I'll lay down and die. I don't want no woman telling me how to live my life. Well, I'm gonna leave you, darling, cause I don't want no wife. Oh, yeah.
Please stay tuned for part two of that classic rock show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRU LP 101.5 FM, where we will continue our discussion with Mr. Paul Nelson.